On your Wednesday, Rich Kimball, Carrie Haskell, and Bruce Pratt joining us as he does every week for Sports Lit 101. Hello again, Bruce.
Hello, Rich. Hello, Carrie. It's good to be back. Great to know I will see you in person next Wednesday.
Oh, that's going to be a special day all around.
Yeah, it's going to be. I'll be bringing some fine homebrew up to celebrate, and we'll have a good time.
That's even better. We made out yesterday. Eric Meehan brought us beer bread and a little something to wash it down with, and you're coming in next week. This is great.
Yeah. Well, we got to get that stuff rolling again. Well, today we're talking about something that is near and dear to my heart, and I want to introduce it in a way that I will put it in context for Maine, I think. There was a time when you could be a kid skiing on the hills up in Greenville with one pair of skis and make it to the Olympics. And Chip Cochran being a prime example of that. Then as time went on, we started to see that skiing became something that became more and more elite all the time. It's a very expensive sport. I had to work full time in the winters in the ski program at Sugarloaf to afford the fees and the equipment for my son to ski race. So I knew how it went. And then you get to where you have these ski academies where kids are paying $30,000 and $40,000 and $50,000 a year to go to them. And then because the seasons have gotten shorter, they're spending time on the glaciers in Oregon, or they're going to Europe, or in the off season, they're going to South America. It's just cut the average kid out of a chance to ski. Now, hockey was always a little better because to play shinny, you needed maybe a pair of shin pads, some gloves, a stick, and skates. And those used to be items that people could afford to buy and could afford to enjoy. And pickup hockey was where a lot of guys came from. And you think about Wayne Gretzky's dad, who always built a rink in the yard, and they didn't even have to take their skates off to come in for lunch. They had a little they had carpeting so you could go all around the table without, you didn't even have to take your skates off. And that became sort of an iconic vision of Canadian hockey. But the problem is climate change has really changed that. This was really noticed in a 2016 article, which was in the World Leisure Journal, which is a peer-reviewed scholarly journal by a guy named Jay Johnson and another one named Adam Ashin. And I'm thinking it's Ashin, could be Ashin, I don't know how to pronounce it, Ali. And their abstract for their piece really said it all. Now, it's a quote from, "Outdoor hockey is considered a quintessentially Canadian leisure pursuit and is enjoyed on rinks constructed in local parks within urban centers as well as on frozen ponds in rural regions of the country." And I'm going to skip a little bit of this. "The meaning behind the loss of outdoor hockey for Canadians by outlining socio-historical narratives that posit hockey as a symbol of childhood, memory, nationhood, and romanticized fantasy. As the migration of hockey into climate-controlled facilities is symbolic of a Canadian physical activity culture that disproportionately favors organized competitive sports." What it has become is very much the way baseball has changed for kids in America. And, you know, I may sound like a fossil, but you never went by a baseball field in the summer in good weather when I was a kid in the two towns that I lived in where somebody wasn't playing, you know, three strikes and you're out, hit the bat, home run derby, or some kind of pickup baseball. Because now everything is little league, you know, from P-ball, everything is organized. Adults are in charge of everything. Everything runs on a schedule. You get to be a certain level, you make the all-star team, you get the travel team. We've seen this infect every single sport. But winter sports were, in a sense, because they took place in a very specific time, a little bit different. And for Canadians, a great part of their mythology, and mythology is not really the right word, but their heritage was the outdoor pursuit of playing hockey on ponds, on lakes, on rivers, on streams. They have estimated now that the first ice to last ice, the length of the outdoor skating season, has diminished by 25 days on the average in Canada. And the farther north you go in Canada, the greater the effects of climate change are. So it's not like this is creeping slightly northward. Instead, it's moving exponentially quicker northward. And what it's done is it's starting to freeze kids out of hockey. If you don't live where there's a facility, and God knows that every facility is overtaxed, then you don't really get a chance to play. Plus, any facility that's built in a town or region is going to have to at some point cater to men's leagues and women's leagues and beer leagues and shinny games and exhibition games and the like. So the only people that can really afford this are the well-to-do. Because a pair of skates today, and if people don't know this, get ready for this shock, is between $700 and $1,000 for top-line skates. I have a pair of those skates I bought 12 years ago for $400. So, you know, this has changed greatly. Kids are now paying not only for uniforms, for fees to play and to practice, for ice time, for tournaments and the like, but in Canada, where they do not have these sports in schools, they're paying for everything, the coaching and everything else. In America, if you make the JV or the varsity football team in most every school, you're going to buy your mouth guard and your shoes. Everything else is going to be part of the deal. These kids are having to buy everything and every year as they grow. So the effect of climate change is to really put hockey, or it could be, and I think it will be, to put hockey out of reach of most Canadians. And what does that do to your national mythology of being the place where hockey is king?
Wow. That is, it's very impressive. I was reading through the article that you sent by Adam and Jay Johnson, and fascinating first to see the science behind it, but also to realize how, I mean, yeah, we've got some history of pond hockey, as you mentioned here, but nothing like Canada has.
Right. And when I, and you know, again, I don't want to sound like a fossil. When I was a kid in Connecticut, we could skate on outdoor ice, usually from the middle of December to a little before Christmas until early March. After that, it could be really dicey. If it was a small pond, it might hold ice longer. And even as long ago as 1990, I skated on an outdoor pond in East Hartland, Connecticut, which is up in the Berkshire Hills, on the very first week of April, listening to a spring training baseball game, which was something a friend of mine really wanted to do, find ice where we could do that. So as the season of ice diminishes, and we just heard on the news at the top of the hour that allergy season is now 20 days longer, what we're starting to see is that outdoor winter recreation is going to be really limited. And if people in Maine don't understand this, I think they do, the snowmobile industry, the ski industry are huge drivers of our winter economy. We don't have anything else that can replace them at the moment. And it's not just the income that comes in from out of state. It's the taxes that people pay. And if we continue to try and mitigate climate change by building more rinks, by learning how to make snow at higher temperatures, we're going to exacerbate it because we're going to increase the carbon footprint for those particular sports. And the more people that have to drive further north to avail themselves of snowmobiling and skiing, the more people that have to come to Maine, that's the more pollution that's brought in by automobiles. And that makes it worse, too. And so their second article these guys wrote, which we don't have time to talk about today, and maybe when we talk to Adam in May, we'll talk to him directly about it, talks about just that. The NHL is holding outdoor games in Southern California at an enormous cost of energy to do that. Why are we doing that? So it's really this was a real eye opener for me. I really wanted to thank Courtney Cito for passing this on to me, because as you've read it, it's a hell of an article.
It sure is. Fascinating stuff. And more on that when Adam joins us down the road a little bit. Next week on Sports Lit 101, we'll talk about, I haven't read it yet, but I'll be doing it over the course of the next few days, what you tell me, and I'm sure is a wonderful book by Eric Sherman, Two Sides of Glory, the 1986 Boston Red Sox in their own words.
Well, and that, the last part of that is exactly what makes it a great book. I mean, there have been other books on 86, and people can argue whether that's the best Red Sox team or not or whatever. But you're going to hear this in Calvin Schiraldi's words. I mean, that took some guts. You're going to hear from Bill Buckner, not just Clemens and Evans and Boggs and Barrett and some of the other guys. But what really is fascinating is all the questions we have about that sixth game in 86. You get everybody's impressions and their honest impressions. And John McNamara is not here to defend himself. But a lot of those decisions and what happened that we may think we know, maybe we don't. Yeah, it's really a good book.
That's coming up next week. And then 2 weeks from today, former Maine Black Bear basketball coach Bob Walsh will be with us to talk about his brand new book.
Yeah, Entitled to Nothing, which both of us really liked. As I've said a number of times, there's no word in the world gets thrown around more loosely and without meaning behind it than leadership. And I liked the angle at which Bob comes at that idea, not is here's what I do and here's how everybody else ought to do it, but here are some of the things I've learned and here are some of the mistakes I've made. And these are some of the things you might think about. And that's a much better approach, I think.
Yeah, I agree with you on that. So some of what's ahead here on Sports Lit 101. Appreciate it, Bruce, as always.
Oh, no problem. And we just got a whole raft of new books today. I've just got three of them I got to look at. So we got plenty to do.